Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're going to be exploring the book of Ezekiel.
Yeah.
And we're going to be drawing from excerpts from a lecture by Dr. Leslie Allen.
Great.
Buckle up, because Ezekiel's story, it's a really captivating mix of history and prophecy.
Yeah. One of the things that makes Ezekiel so intriguing
is
that it's not a simple chronological narrative.
Right.
The way it's put together, it almost feels like a second edition.
Oh, a second edition.
Yeah, with messages and themes.
Interesting.
Rearranged for more powerful impact.
Mm. So a second edition, you say?
Yeah.
What does that mean for understanding the book as a whole?
Well, Dr. Allen, he suggests that the book might have been restructured to speak to different groups of exiles.
Okay.
Those taken to Babylon in 597 BC and those who followed in 587 BC.
Okay.
And this raises some interesting questions about the development of Ezekiel's message.
Yeah.
And the evolution of his role as a prophet.
So it's not just about the order of events.
Right.
But about the audience and the message's intended effect.
Yeah.
That adds a whole new dimension to reading this book.
Absolutely. And this restructuring highlights a shift in Ezekiel's role.
Okay.
Initially, he comes across as a prophet of absolute judgment, just pronouncements.
Okay.
With a take it or leave it attitude.
Yeah.
But later we see this intriguing shift.
Okay.
Where Ezekiel receives a second commission.
A second commission.
This time as a watchman.
A watchman.
Mm.
Now I'm picturing like someone perched on a city wall, scanning the horizon for danger.
Right.
How does that concept translate to a prophet's role?
It's a great analogy.
Mm-hmm.
In ancient Israel, watchmen would alert the community to threats.
Okay.
And Ezekiel's later commission emphasizes this idea of warning.
Okay.
Giving the people a chance to change their ways and to avoid impending disaster.
Mm.
And this implies a sense of choice and responsibility that wasn't as prominent in his earlier messages.
This makes me think about how people would have received these messages.
Right.
It must have been jarring to hear those initial pronouncements of absolute judgment.
Right.
And then later be given a chance to change their fate. Makes you wonder about the psychological impact of this shift in tone.
It is a fascinating question.
Yeah.
It's almost as if God, through Ezekiel, is acknowledging the exiles' pain and giving them a new opportunity for a different outcome.
Okay.
But these messages, they weren't just delivered verbally.
Right.
Ezekiel was known for his dramatic symbolic actions.
Interesting.
Almost like performance art.
Oh, wow.
To convey God's message.
Symbolic actions? Like, what do you mean performance art?
Well, Dr. Allen highlights five key actions that Ezekiel used to communicate with the people.
Okay.
The first is surprisingly passive, silence and seclusion.
Silence.
Yeah. Ezekiel is instructed to stay home and remain silent.
Wow.
Symbolizing God's alienation from his people because of their rebellion.
Silence can be so powerful.
Yeah.
Especially in the situation where people are desperate for answers.
Right.
What do you think Ezekiel was trying to accomplish with this?
Well, I think it speaks to the depth of God's disappointment and that broken relationship between God and the Israelites.
Okay.
And the silence, it might have been a way to force the exiles to confront the gravity of their actions, the consequences of their choices.
And then the silence is broken, right? What happens next?
The next symbolic action is much more active.
Okay.
Ezekiel creates a miniature model of Jerusalem under siege.
A model.
Yeah. Complete with siege works.
Wow.
And an iron plate separating him representing God from the city.
An iron plate. That's a stark visual.
Yeah.
What kind of message was that sending?
Well, imagine seeing this depiction of your beloved city under siege, separated from God by this impenetrable barrier.
Right.
This iron plate, it symbolizes God's withdrawal of protection and favor from Jerusalem because of its sin.
Wow.
It's a powerful and likely devastating message
for
those longing for restoration.
So Ezekiel, he certainly wasn't shying away from difficult truths.
Right.
These symbolic actions must have been quite the spectacle.
They were certainly attention-grabbing.
Yeah.
And the next one is even more physically demanding.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Ezekiel lies on his side first for 390 days and then for 40 days.
Wow.
To represent both the sin of Israel and the punishment of exile.
Lying on one side for that long?
Yeah.
That's quite a commitment.
It is.
Now, Dr. Allen, he also pointed out something interesting about the Hebrew word used in this passage.
Yes.
It can mean both sin and punishment.
Yes, that's right.
That creates some ambiguity in the interpretation.
Exactly. And the different translations handle this nuance in various ways.
Okay.
Which makes it even more interesting to unpack.
Right.
Dr. Allen proposes that the left side representing 390 days symbolizes the accumulated sin of the people over centuries.
Okay.
Connecting it to the years since Solomon's temple.
Hmm.
The right side, with its 40 days, could represent the immediate punishment of exile,
right,
referencing the traditional 40 years of wandering in the wilderness.
So it's not just about the duration of the act,
right,
but also the deeper meaning embedded in the specific number of days.
Yeah.
And the ambiguity of the Hebrew word itself.
Absolutely.
It's like a puzzle.
It is.
With multiple layers of meaning.
Yeah. Ezekiel is engaging his audience on multiple levels.
Right.
Using physical actions, numbers, even linguistic nuances.
Wow.
To convey a complex message.
This is fascinating.
Yeah.
But we're not done yet, are we? What other symbolic actions does Ezekiel employ?
The next act revolves around food scarcity.
Food scarcity.
Ezekiel bakes and eats bread made from a mixture of grains, symbolizing the food shortages during the siege of Jerusalem.
Okay.
He's also limited in the amount of water he can drink.
This one feels particularly relatable even today.
It does.
Experiencing scarcity, even if it's just for a short time,
right,
can be a powerful reminder of what truly matters.
Yeah.
How do you think this act resonated with the exiles?
Well, the exiles, they knew firsthand the fear of scarcity.
Right.
Having experienced the upheaval of displacement,
yeah,
the uncertainty of life in a foreign land,
right,
Ezekiel's actions likely tapped into that collective memory,
okay,
reminding them of the hardships they had faced and those that still lay ahead.
It's a powerful reminder that even the most basic necessities,
yeah,
can become sources of anxiety and hardship.
Absolutely.
Makes you wonder how these symbolic actions were received.
Hmm.
Did they evoke empathy?
Yeah.
Anger?
Right.
Did they inspire repentance or defiance?
It's hard to know for sure.
We'll have to delve deeper into that question,
yeah,
as we continue our exploration of Ezekiel's message.
Yeah.
But first, there's one more symbolic act we need to discuss.
That's right. The final symbolic action involves a haircut.
A haircut?
Yeah. Ezekiel is instructed to cut his hair.
Okay.
And divide it into three parts.
Okay.
Each representing a different fate for the people of Jerusalem.
Haircutting can be symbolic in so many cultures.
It can.
Often representing a change or a transition. What meaning did this act hold in Ezekiel's time?
Well, in ancient Israel, hair held significant cultural and religious meaning.
Right.
Cutting it off was often associated with mourning or ritual purification.
Okay.
Ezekiel's act of dividing his hair into three portions, each destined for a different symbolic fate, burning, slashing, and scattering.
Wow.
Underscores the severity of the impending judgment,
mm,
and the various ways in which it would manifest.
So we left off last time discussing Ezekiel's traumatic symbolic actions, you know,
right,
acts of silence, siege, even lying on his side for days.
Yeah.
What strikes me is how visceral these actions were.
Right.
You know, it wasn't just about words.
Yeah.
It was about engaging all the senses.
Absolutely. Ezekiel's prophecies were meant to be experienced, not just heard.
Right.
These actions, they likely evoked strong emotions in the exiles.
Okay.
You know, forcing them to confront the reality of their situation,
right,
and the potential consequences of their choices.
So we've got this buildup of tension, this sense of impending judgment.
Yeah.
But then, as Dr. Allen points out, the tone of the book, it starts to shift.
Right.
We move from judgment oracles to messages of salvation and hope,
mm,
becoming more prominent in the second half.
Yeah, it's like the storm clouds are parting,
okay,
and we're starting to see the glimmers and light, but
yeah,
it's not a simple shift.
Okay.
Even in these messages of salvation,
yeah,
the emphasis on repentance,
right,
and returning to God's ways,
right,
remains strong.
So it's not just about escaping punishment.
Right.
It's about a genuine change of heart.
Yeah.
A recognition of the need for a new way of living.
Exactly. The hope that Ezekiel offers is conditional.
Okay.
It hinges on the people's willingness to change their ways.
Okay.
Turn back to God.
Hmm. This brings us back to the Watchman Commission we discussed earlier.
Yeah.
You know, Ezekiel is tasked with warning the wicked.
Right.
And their fate rests on their response to that warning.
Mm.
Makes you think about the weight of that responsibility.
Yeah.
Both for Ezekiel as the Watchman.
Right.
And for the people hearing his message,
absolutely,
knowing that their choices have real consequences,
yeah,
must have been both terrifying and empowering.
It's a powerful dynamic.
Yeah.
And this theme of choice, of individual accountability,
right,
becomes even more central in the second half of Ezekiel.
Let's talk about that shift toward hope.
Okay.
How does Ezekiel's language change as he begins to offer these glimpses of a brighter future?
Mm.
What specific words or themes stand out to you?
One word that emerges as a central theme in these later prophecies,
yeah,
is life.
Life.
It becomes a multifaceted concept,
okay,
representing not just physical survival, but spiritual renewal.
Right.
And a future overflowing with blessing and abundance.
So it's not just about avoiding death.
Right.
It's about embracing a fullness of life.
Yeah.
A life lived in right relationship with God.
Yeah.
Makes me think about what that kind of life would have meant to the exiles.
Mm.
What did they long for? What did they hope to regain?
Well, for many exiles, the loss of their homeland.
Yeah.
It was more than just a geographical displacement.
Right.
It was a loss of identity, a severing of their connection to their history and their faith.
Right.
Ezekiel's message of life, it taps into this longing for restoration.
Okay.
Promising not just a return to the land,
right,
but a reestablishment of the covenant relationship between God and his people.
It's a powerful promise.
Yeah.
The idea of returning home, rebuilding what was lost.
Right.
Experiencing a renewed sense of belonging.
Mm-hmm.
But I imagine that promise wasn't without its challenges.
Of course not.
How did Ezekiel envision this process of restoration unfolding?
Well, Ezekiel doesn't just offer vague promises.
Okay.
He gets specific.
Okay.
He provides detailed descriptions of the rebuilding of the temple.
Right.
The reestablishment of proper worship.
Okay.
And the flourishing of the land under God's blessing.
So these visions weren't meant to be mere daydreams.
No, they were blueprints for action, challenging the exiles to prepare themselves for a future return.
So it's not just about passively waiting for God to fix everything.
No.
It's about active participation.
Yeah.
It's about cultivating a spirit of repentance and renewal.
Right.
And being ready to roll up their sleeve and be part of the rebuilding process.
Exactly. There's a collaborative spirit embedded in these visions.
Okay.
You know, God is the architect.
Yeah.
But the people are invited to be the builders.
Right.
Working alongside him to bring about this restoration.
It's a powerful image, this partnership between God and humanity.
It is.
But let's face it, change is never easy.
Right.
What kind of challenges did the exiles face as they tried to embrace this message of hope and restoration?
Well, for starters, they were living in a foreign land,
right,
surrounded by a culture that didn't share their beliefs or values.
Yeah.
Containing their faith and cultural identity would have been a constant struggle.
I can imagine the pressure to assimilate,
right,
to blend in and let go of those things that made them different.
Yeah.
How did they navigate that tension between preserving their heritage and adapting to their new environment?
It's a question that resonates throughout history, isn't it?
It is.
The struggle to find that balance,
right,
between holding onto one's identity,
yeah,
and embracing the new.
And remember, we're talking about different groups of exiles,
right,
who experienced the trauma of displacement in different ways.
Right. And Dr. Allen suggests that the restructuring of Ezekiel's book,
yeah,
might have been an attempt to address the specific needs of those later exiles,
okay,
who arrived in Babylon after the destruction of Jerusalem.
So the same message of hope and restoration might have landed differently.
Wow.
Depending on whether someone had experienced the destruction of Jerusalem firsthand.
Right.
Or had only heard stories about it.
Exactly.
That adds another layer of complexity to how we understand these messages.
It does.
Absolutely. For those who had witnessed the destruction,
yeah,
the trauma would have been palpable.
Right.
Their faith might have been shaken, their hope dimmed.
Hmm.
But Ezekiel's message reminded them that even in the face of devastating loss,
yeah,
God hadn't abandoned them.
Mm.
There was still a future.
Right.
And they could be part of rebuilding what was broken.
That's such a powerful message.
It is.
A lifeline for those struggling to find their footing amidst the wreckage of their lives.
But this message wasn't just about the future, was it?
No, it wasn't.
It also had implications for how they lived in the present.
Exactly. Ezekiel called on the exiles to maintain their faith.
Okay.
To live righteous lives, even in a foreign land.
Right.
And to prepare themselves for a future return.
So it's about holding on to hope.
Yeah.
But it's also about living faithfully in the here and now.
Right.
It's about making choices that align with God's will.
Hmm.
Even when surrounded by temptation and challenges.
That's a powerful message for any time or place.
It is.
It reminds us that even when we face difficulties or setbacks,
yeah,
we can still choose to live in a way that honors God,
right,
and reflects his character.
It's about finding that glimmer of hope, that spark of faith, even in the midst of challenging circumstances.
Right.
And using that hope to fuel our actions and guide our choices.
Precisely. And that's the enduring power of Ezekiel's message.
Okay.
You know, it speaks not only to the historical reality of the exiles,
right,
but also to the universal human experience,
right,
of longing for hope, restoration, and a sense of belonging.
We've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive.
We have.
Exploring the complexities of Ezekiel's message.
Yeah.
The shift from judgment to hope.
Right.
And the challenges of living faithfully in exile.
Right.
But there's still more to uncover, isn't there?
Yeah.
What awaits us in the final act of Ezekiel's prophetic drama? So we've journeyed with Ezekiel from pronouncements of judgment through these powerful symbolic actions.
Right.
To a promise of hope and restoration for the exiles.
Yeah.
Now we arrive at the culmination of his prophetic vision.
Hmm.
What awaits us in these final chapters?
Well, the final chapters of Ezekiel.
Yeah.
Contains some of the most visually stunning and elaborate imagery in the entire Bible.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we encounter visions of a transformed future
okay.
that go far beyond the physical rebuilding of Jerusalem.
Mm.
It is truly breathtaking.
Okay, now you've piqued my curiosity. Paint a picture for me.
Okay.
What does this transformed future look like?
Well, imagine a world where God's presence is so tangible
okay.
that it transforms the very landscape.
Mm.
Ezekiel describes a new temple.
Right.
Far grander and more glorious than anything Solomon could have envisioned.
Okay.
And this temple, it's not just a static structure.
Right.
It becomes a source of life-giving water that flows outward.
Water.
Yeah.
Okay.
Healing the land.
Right.
Transforming that barren wilderness into a flourishing paradise.
A river flowing from the temple, bringing life and healing.
Right.
That's such a vivid image.
It is.
It seems to go beyond a simple physical restoration.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
It's a powerful metaphor for the transformative power of God's grace.
Okay.
That's river. It represents the outpouring of God's spirit cleansing, renewing,
right. Yeah.
Bringing life to all who encounter it.
So it's not just about rebuilding bricks and mortar.
Right.
It's about a spiritual revival, a renewal of that deep connection between God and his people.
Precisely. And this renewed relationship,
yeah.
It takes center stage in Ezekiel's vision of a transformed city.
Okay.
A new Jerusalem, which becomes the dwelling place for God and his people.
Hmm.
This city, it's depicted as a place of perfect order, justice, and harmony.
Sounds like a glimpse of heaven on earth.
Yeah.
A utopia where all is made right.
In a sense, yes. But it's important to remember that these visions, they aren't meant to be taken literally.
Right.
They're symbolic representations of God's ultimate plan for humanity.
Right.
A plan that transcends the historical context of Ezekiel's time.
So how do we approach these visions today?
Mm.
What relevance do they hold for us thousands of years later?
Well, Ezekiel's visions, they offer a glimpse of the ultimate fulfillment of God's promises.
Hmm.
They point toward a future where sin and suffering are eradicated.
Okay.
And where God's presence dwells fully among his people.
Right.
And this message, it reminds us that even amidst the brokenness and chaos of our world,
yeah.
God is at work bringing about his purposes,
yeah.
Moving us toward a future filled with hope.
It's a powerful antidote to describe.
Yeah.
A reminder that even when things seem bleak, God hasn't given up on us.
Mm.
He's working towards something far greater than we can imagine.
And these visions, they aren't just meant to comfort us.
Okay.
They also challenge us to live in a way that reflects that future reality.
Okay, how so?
Well, they call us to be agents of healing and reconciliation in our world.
Right.
To work for justice and righteousness.
Right.
And to cultivate a spirit of hope and expectancy.
So it's not just about waiting for heaven.
No.
It's about actively participating.
Right.
And bringing a little bit of heaven to earth right here, right now.
Exactly. And that's the enduring challenge that Ezekiel leaves us with.
Okay.
Throughout his book, we've encountered judgment.
Right.
Hope.
Yeah.
And ultimately a vision of a future far more magnificent than we could have ever imagined.
It's been an incredible deep dive.
It has.
And I feel like I've gained a new understanding of Ezekiel's message.
Hmm.
And its power to speak across centuries.
It's a message that continues to resonate.
Yeah.
You know, challenging us to examine our own lives.
Right.
And consider how we might participate in God's ongoing work of restoration and renewal.
As always, we like to leave our listeners with something to ponder.
Mm.
If Ezekiel were speaking to us today,
yeah.
What vision of a transformed future would he offer?
Mm.
What would he challenge us to do to participate in that future?
Mm.
And what would it look like to be a watchman in our own time and place?
Those are excellent questions to consider.
Yeah.
We encourage you to delve deeper into the book of Ezekiel.
Right.
And discover for yourself the richness and relevance of his message.
Thank you for joining us on the deep dive.
Yeah.
Keep exploring, keep questioning,
mm.
and keep seeking knowledge.
Right.
Until next time.